You're listening to Radio Reverb 97.2 FM in the Brighton area and RadioReverb.com online. Welcome to the UK's only radio show about HIV and living a healthy life. It's the HIV Hour. On today's show, we feature a rundown of the latest news and talking points about living with HIV from the Brighton area and the world at large. Also, information on Brighton's HIV organisations and some other events. Do email us at hivhour@gmail.com. Or you can follow us on Twitter at @HIV_hour and Instagram at @HIVHour. If you miss the show on a Thursday at 7 p.m, then you can listen again at 4 p.m. on Monday and at noon on Tuesday, or indeed catch up with an older show by going to the Listen Again page on RadioReverb.com.
Good evening, good morning, good afternoon to everyone.
Hello.
Hello.
Hello, everyone.
How is everyone? Good.
So we do good. Yes, it's good that it's cooled down now. Normal temperatures for summer.
We can all go back to moaning about the weather now.
There's not enough water now, is there? So we're going to fry and we're going to not be able to drink.
Oh gosh!
What, one extreme to the other, isn't it?
It is. Never ends. It never ends, does it?
I know.
How are you, Sue?
I'm fine. Yeah, I was just, before we came on there, I was just mentioning to David that I was actually in London last week, on the hottest day. And I mean, I'm the sort of gal that will sit out in any heat and take it on and let it come, you know. But I tell you what, I felt suffocated walking the not literally walking the streets of London, but what a save there.
Yes.
But I think we're lovely to be down on the coast in Brighton with that bit of air, sea air, bit of breeze. I think we had a bit of a relief down here, to be honest.
Yeah. How about you, Stephen? What's it like in London?
Yeah, it's that intense heat has gone, but it's still quite muggy. It's still quite clammy. You know, and as you say, so we don't have the breeze, so it's still slightly uncomfortable, but it's a lot better than it was last week.
Yes.
What about you, David?
Yeah, like I say, it's nice to be able to breathe again, and the cats aren't so suffering in the heat as well.
It gets the animals, doesn't it? Animals have to really take care of your animals, don't you? And it's
I find that I find them licking their legs a bit like kangaroos. I don't know if that's how they sort of keep cool with it when it sort of evaporates.
How are you, Josh?
I'm all right. Yes, it's my last day at radio. Well, I'm not doing the show, but doing my role as station producer. I finished that role. So I'm free as a bird.
Are you advertising for that role? I'm just wondering if any of our listeners
I think they are. I think they're trying to do it internally first and then maybe comes out. But so I've been there 2 years, so I've learned a lot, actually. I've done a lot of learning. But it'd be good to concentrate on the show a little bit more. Maybe a weekly, back to being weekly again. So
That'd be great.
I think it's needed. I think, you know, it's people like it. So you went somewhere at the weekend, you and Stephen, did you?
Well, it was last Monday, actually, wasn't it, Stephen? We went to, I believe we've had one in Brighton, the book signing with Jill Nalder. You probably remember that, David, And, well, this was more of a bigger event at the Vauxhall Tavern. And, no, I've never been there before. Apparently it's a very famous gay bar. Am I correct, boys, saying that? I mean, I don't know.
I was trying to fill Sue in with all the background information about the Vauxhall Tavern. I was trying to fill her in on all that kind of thing. So
was it good?
Was brilliant. It was a really lovely evening. We sort of stayed for some of the entertainment at the end, but what was so amazing, Josh? Do you remember, Stephen, when she was talking about extracts from her book and what inspired her and what inspires her today is that some of the people that were in the came to the Pink Palace back in the day were there in the on the evening, weren't they? That was just amazing. And it just it sort of really brought the It's a Sin series to light. And they spoke, and apparently the family members of I don't remember the guy's name, but he was the Welsh guy, wasn't he, Stephen? That lovely guy that played a magnificent part, you know, when he was at his mum was at the bedside. That was awful, wasn't it?
Yeah.
So he portrayed a real person, obviously. And the family, and that wonderful dramatic scene, you know, he had his mum on the bedside. It was all, you know, it was magnificently played. Obviously, he portrayed a real person. And the family of that man that died was there on the evening.
Yeah.
How amazing, you know. And
And just for anybody that doesn't know, so Jill Naldo was she's written a book, and she was one of the parts in It's a Sin was written about her. You know, she inspired that part to be written. So she's a friend with Russell T. Davies, and she's who wrote the show. So she's a really interesting. She's got a really interesting story, doesn't she? So herself, you know. Mm-hmm. So yeah.
Yeah, it was maybe a lovely evening.
Maybe get back onto the show sometime, talk about a book, maybe.
Most definitely, yeah. I did have a quick little chat with her and said, we need to get you back on the show, Jill. But I know she's doing a lot of touring with her book and everything else at the moment. So, yeah, most definitely.
Yeah. So what's on the show tonight? You did an amazing interview, did you, Stephen, with Anita?
I did, yeah. I did Anita Sullivan is a playwright. She's been living with HIV for about 20 years. And she wrote this play that was about the virus, you know, so it was the play from the virus's side. So the virus had a voice and the virus had opinions and thoughts and things. So, I helped Anita do, I read a little part in it, and a number of the other Positive Voices speakers did as well. So, so it was really interesting getting to speak to Anita about that in the interview.
Yeah, it sounds like a good interview, but I listened to it. It's a really good interview. So,
yeah.
And also we're going to talk about monkeypox, aren't we? Because it's gone.
Monkeypox again.
Again.
Yes. Forever updates we're getting, aren't we, on this virus,
And also, we're going to come back with David with your projects, More to Me Than HIV, and another update.
Good.
Mm-hmm. So it's it's all kind of great show today. Shall we get on with it?
Let's get on. Get on with it. Yeah.
The show must go on.
HIV Hour is the UK's only show for people living with HIV, sharing stories, news and views on living positively with the virus.
Hi everybody, welcome back to the HIV Hour. So today I have a guest, and my guest is Anita Sullivan. And Anita, I've known Anita through Positive Voices speaking and things like that, because we both do that. But Anita got in touch with me. Would it be last year, Anita, that you started getting people to come on board for this?
Yeah, it's a project that I've been hatching for a while, but I started reaching out to people early this year, I think it was. Yeah.
Right. Yep. So Anita's project is End of Transmission. It's a play that's been on BBC Radio 4, and it's a Radio 4 drama, and basically it's what I get from it is that it is HIV written from HIV side, really, isn't it, Anita? Am I right in saying that?
You are. It's come from a strange place to get to that decision that one of the characters in the drama was going to be the virus itself.
Yeah.
And part of that was that I hear, working with Positive Voices, I hear so many stories. Everyone in among the Positive Voices group, there's such diversity, not just about who we are and our characteristics, but our experience of living with the virus. It's so different. And also hearing things that have other plays that have been written about HIV, they tend to take one window on it. Mm-hmm. It's often a personal story, or it's one place and one time. And I haven't heard anything that tried to pull that together and give you a wider picture, which is global. And it spans 100 years. Mm-hmm. And for some reason, I thought it would be a good idea to do that on the radio in an hour. So the virus is the only person or creature or entity that knows that whole story. So he became a character. And he became a he. Mostly because I cast a female lead for the woman who's living with HIV.
Yeah.
So I wanted a contrast voice, so you knew who was talking. It was that basic.
And you know, it's quite interesting, Anita, because people that I know that have listened to it have said, we didn't realise that there was such a, you know, 100 years history of HIV. You know, they didn't realise how far it went back, and so that's been really interesting for a lot of people. Was that something that you felt was important to make clear for people?
It's relatively new information, I think, and not a lot of people know about that history. That there's been genome tracking of HIV that's given it a fairly tight origin point of German Cameroon, somewhere between 1911 and 1920-25. So it looks likely that there were shifting populations through the First World War, and people were driven into the forest to hunt in ways they hadn't before because of supply line and those kind of issues,
yeah.
Feeding armies. And they brought humans into contact with chimpanzees in a way that they hadn't been before. And there is a ring of truth to that. That seems to be the kind of behavioural aspect of what might have happened seems to match up with what's been discovered in the RNA of the virus.
Yeah, yeah. And did
it's a great book. Don't just take my word for it. It's Jacques Pepin. The origins of HIV.
Right.
If you could.
Right. Another thing, Anita, was it important for you, because obviously, you know, we know as Positive Voices speakers that HIV is not something that is, you know, what a lot of people still imagine it to be, that it's a gay disease and that it's a disease that only men get. So to have a woman as your person living with HIV, was that important for you to have?
It was, and this isn't to kind of ignore the huge story of HIV and campaigning that has been part of the gay story, the gay man story. Without that, I wouldn't be in the position I am in now, which is having effective treatment and having had such excellent care in Brighton. But there is a female side to this. Correct me if I'm wrong on these stats, but over half the world's population of people living with HIV are women, and it's approaching a third of the people with HIV living in the UK. We're not a small proportion.
Exactly.
And also, I chose to make her older. She's 50.
Mm-hmm.
Because HIV is also seen as a young person's illness. Actually, late diagnosis in older people is more common than in younger people. And those of us who have been living with HIV successfully, we're getting old.
Yeah.
Who'd have thought?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, it's very true. And was it something that you felt that you'd been thinking about for a while, Anita, this idea of this story and this way of telling it, or you know, was it something that came to you during COVID, or was it something that had been there longer?
I've been a radio writer for a long time. I've had about 60 pieces broadcast, some of them little, but some of them quite big. Mm-hmm. And so it's kind of my medium. But there is an advantage to it as well, because you can go inside people's heads, which is quite key. And you can also, how would you present a virus in pictures? How would you personify it? I could maybe see it happening in a graphic novel almost, but not really film or TV.
Yes.
The radio seems like a good place for a virus to have a voice.
And how did you decide to, you know, was it, you know, because some people said to me, why was the virus a man? And I said, well, why not? You know, I said, it doesn't, you know, but was there any particular reason for that? Or was it just, as you say, you did say, sorry, that, you know, because the person living with HIV was a woman. But was there any other reasons behind that? No.
I thought about it lots of different ways around, I must say. And one of the things that I was toying with was that in my logic, the virus has a memory of all the hosts, a lot of hosts, and that its gender and accent and person would change depending on who he inhabited last. And actually, in the story, I don't think this is a spoiler. the last person he inhabited was a Scottish man.
Mm-hmm.
So I kind of went with my own story logic on that one.
Yeah, yeah. And you, as I said earlier, you contacted, you put out an email to people that you knew were positive voices speakers and that. So you had some of us have little bits of dialogue in the play. How important was that to have people with, you know, living with HIV, living with the virus? How important was it for that, you know, to be part of the play?
For me, it was absolutely critical. To have that reality, to have that breadth of experience of living with HIV. I didn't trust my own perspective to be able to carry the weight of that. It needed that multiple voice. As it happened, the voice mix and the people that came forward, you just sound terrific together. I listened to the rest of the drama with a kind of professional hat on, and I come to your bits and I just end up in tears some of the time. It's so powerful, and I'm so grateful. And it was part of the pitch right from the beginning when I first approached the BBC that was what I wanted to do. And I was glad that the Positive Voices crew got involved and got on board with that.
Was it difficult to cast not from the Positive Voices, but from your other cast, like casting the virus, casting Jude, casting Kenny? Because you know, when you think back, Anita, to 20 years ago, when you know you did something about HIV, and it could be. I know this as an actor myself, you know, people would say, oh, well, it could be dangerous for you career-wise. So obviously things have changed, thankfully. But how willing were your other cast, you know, to be involved with this project?
It's interesting. I don't know, to be honest. I think everybody that we approached embraced the subject matter. think the biggest problem for us with casting actually was that because there's been such a backlog of activity in both film and theatre, a lot of actors are super busy at the moment. So there was more of that issue going on than anything else. But I got my first choice in a lot of places, and I was really happy about that.
Yeah, it was so funny to funny for me as a listener to hear the virus with a voice, because so often we just know it as a virus, and David Haig who played the voice of the virus, it was so strange, but good strange to actually hear the virus with a voice, if that makes sense, you know.
It's really funny because, as you know, my questions for the Positive Voices speakers, I had a little list. Some of them were very sort of factual and biographical, but some of them were a bit odd. Like I asked you, how do you visualise the virus in your body?
Yeah.
And do you ever have conversations with it? And have your feeling about it changed over time? And asking those questions, even people who didn't really visualise it or speak to it had a really clear relationship with it. Mm-hmm. They had a sense of what this thing was. And for a lot of us, it has changed over time. And that's one of the critical things about the play as well, was I wanted that, the happy ending. I wanted to tell a story where someone is on effective treatment. They can't pass it on. That is their story, and that's that you can live well with HIV. That there's in the historic parts of the drama, yes, people are ill, and we do show that. But Jude has been our lead character, has been living well with the virus for 20 years, and it's only her curiosity that is making her take a drug holiday. Mm-hmm. So she could talk to the virus.
Yeah.
So that was really important to me as well, that we cut that.
Yeah, it made sense, Anita. It's funny how the questions that you had asked us at the beginning, once I listened to the drama, it all made sense, you know. And I was amazed how I was just amazed at how well it worked, you know. It was really interesting to hear how well it worked, you know, that the virus actually having a voice and having thoughts and opinions, and you know, it was great. So where can people hear it, Anita, if they want to, if they have missed it when it was on, where can they hear it now?
It's available on BBC Sounds at the moment, and I don't see any limit to that. I think that's ongoing. So you have to search for End of Transmission. End of Transmission. If you just search for HIV, you get a load of other programmes, which are all interesting, but not this one. So do search for End of Transmission, and you'll find it on Sounds. You can also possibly, depending on your what TV package you have, you might be able to get it on Catch Up, and I think it's available on iPlayer as well.
Yeah.
And for the next 30 days, it's also available on the BBC's own website. So.
Brilliant. Well, I know I'm biased, but you know, it's definitely worth listening to, because it's just a different way of looking at it, you know, and it's a really clever way of looking at it. So thank you for inviting us to be part of it, Anita, and we will look forward to seeing what's next from you.
You're welcome. Well, I do have a bundle of amazing recordings from all of you, which I could only use a tiny percentage of, and I'm hoping there might be a chance to give them a bigger piece at some point. So it's just your voices, no virus getting in and saying his piece.
So watch this space. Thank you very much for being on the HIV Hour today.
Thanks very much, Stephen. Thanks for inviting me.
Thank you.
Radio Reverb. 97.2.
Hey, everybody. So welcome back to the HIV Hour.
Yeah, I listened to the play last week on BBC Sounds, and I've had HIV for 29 years, and I learned quite a few new things. It was very cleverly written and well produced by all.
Yeah,
I mean, it's amazing to get a different point of view, isn't it? A different perspective.
Exactly.
The BBC Sounds is where to go, and I've listened to that. So we're going to do a little update on monkeypox, aren't we? Because WHO have upgraded it to an emergency, haven't they, now? Because more countries have got more people infected by monkeypox. So what's the new stuff? Have you got any new information, Sue?
Well, I've just looked, just quickly, because there's stuff coming out every single day. Apparently, so far, the evidence suggests that transmission continues to occur primarily within interconnection sexual networks. It's a big word. Currently, we are not seeing significant levels of transmission outside of these networks, and we continue to monitor for change. So, I mean, I know for a fact that they are that they're saying they haven't got enough of the vaccines at the moment. And I learned something the other day that you have to have two jabs or whatever, you know, you've got to have two doses of whatever that is. And they're getting concerned now that they may not have enough of the vaccine for everybody to go around. So, I mean, the good thing is we're getting updated literally as things happen, which is good. So we are being kept in the loop, as one would say. But do you know any more information, Stephen? Have you heard anything within London? Because you're London based, aren't you?
You know, I've actually, I've actually heard very little, Sue. You know, I know I keep seeing things on online, but I know a couple of people that actually had one of the injections yesterday. One of our friends, Jonathan, who's been on the show, and he had one of them yesterday, but I haven't actually heard much here in London. So I kind of feel a bit in the dark about what I should be doing as somebody that's got HIV. Should I be doing something? You know, it's a bit worrying, isn't it?
Yeah. It's just being aware and being careful what we do, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm just looking at the Brighton and Hove Sexual Health website, which the Lawson Unit is part of, and it says a small number of people have been diagnosed in the southeast. Please call us if you have any of these conditions like fever, high temperature, rashes, spots, blisters on any part of the body. They do say they have a limited supply of vaccinations for those most at risk, and when there are more vaccines available, they will run a full vaccination clinic. So follow the website rather than turning up at the clinic, because I know some people are turning up at the clinic and they just can't cope with that.
No, I think what's happening is people are turning up and they have to clean everything, like, and so that it stops the whole day. So do call them. But I think there's about, I was just looking at how many the stats, and there's in the UK there's 2,208 people with it. In America, there's 3,000 at the moment that's going on. I think it's because it's historically not in these the countries that are reporting this. So it's, that's why it's become kind of a bit of an emergency now, because countries are reporting that haven't historically had monkeypox are reporting cases now. So I think that's why they've declared it an emergency.
Yeah.
But they also, it's a stigma, isn't it? When you watch the news, like, you just, because of who it's affecting, gay men, you have to be so careful, don't we? And I've noticed on the news that they are saying that.
Yeah.
We have to be careful of how we talk about this.
Exactly.
Going back to the AIDS, how he was in the 80s. So,
yeah.
But it's a difficult one, how to deal with that. Do you mention it? Do you have to mention these gay men?
I mean,
it's a difficult one.
It is. I mean, I'm very conscious of, I mean, I think I've said this before, but anyone that has a platform, small or large, we need to be really promoting those messages, you know, that anyone can be affected. We've even taken the messages into our schools and colleges. I know they've just broken up, but we are talking about monkeypox within a school setting, a very small amount, just, you know, to say we don't want to go back to, you know, the beginning of the AIDS crisis as it was back then. We need to, as a young person, you need to understand, you know, we don't want to have those. So we're trying to do as much as we can. So let's hope we get a resolve to this. And
Is that educating without stigma, isn't it?
So, exactly.
Yeah.
Hi, if you've just tuned in, this is the HIV Hour on 97.2 FM in the Brighton area and .com online. You can also get the show on our famous podcast. Now we've got the lovely David Frayne. He's going to give us an update on More to Me than HIV. Take it away, David.
Oh, thank you, Sue, and lovely to meet you again, Josh. And Stephen, I've got your name.
It's all good.
I'll start that again. Thank you, Sue. Lovely to see you all. And in fact, we all here today were part of the More to Me exhibition. We had an exhibition for the whole month of June in the London Lighthouse Gallery and Studio, and ourselves and 20 other people were exhibiting our portraits. Some of them were at life size, and it was to raise money for three charities, which was the 4M Network, which is for migrant mothers assisting each other and helping each other through pregnancy and rearing children. PrEPster, who are advocating the use of PrEP and have campaigned really hard to get PrEP more widely available, and the Martin Fisher Foundation, which is based here in Brighton, that is working towards zero transmissions of HIV by 2030 and reducing stigma. So the exhibition is the second exhibition we've had. The first one was in Brighton, and it's all about showing the people living with HIV and not really being affected by it, just showing people with passions and dreams and hopes and ambitions. Now that we know that HIV can be very well prevented and also very well controlled, that we cannot pass it on, we wanted to show that there is nothing to be scared of about living with HIV. So we had these 24 portraits, which is more portraits than we had in Brighton, so we added a few to the number. And so we raised, we haven't got an exact figure at the moment, but we've raised over £2,000 for the three charities all together. We raised over £1,000 on the night. We had a private viewing night on the 9th of June. Over 100 people attended, and people were buying prints and catalogues of our portraits, so they could have, you know, if you didn't want to buy a whole print, you could have a little mini booklet with all the portraits in, and each one of them with a little QR code of the person describing their portrait and why there was more to them than HIV. So we raised over £2,000 for our nominated charities, which I mentioned just now. And now we're going to be, well, we are already talking about what we're going to do next. So we'd quite like to take it to other cities, maybe Manchester, maybe that's the first one on our list. But we'd, you know, maybe nice to take it to the Four Nations, so maybe sort of Belfast or to something like Edinburgh, Glasgow, or take it to Cardiff or Swansea or somewhere in Wales. And then each place we go to, we could probably add to the number of portraits by including people who are local to that area. So then we sort of almost like a bit like a relay baton, we can pass it on to the people in the cities that we pass it on to. And the number of people being shown will grow. And people will be able to identify with people in their own cities where they see the exhibition. Those are discussions up for the future. And we're also possibly thinking about having the exhibition as part of an HIV festival, so a festival about living well with HIV.
Yeah,
so those discussions might be certainly for Brighton. I know Brighton wants to have those conversations, and I think London was also interested. Because we had very good support in June, also from the Conference of People Living with HIV, which was organised by Positive UK, and we had some of the prints on display in the plenary hall in the exhibition centre, and that really did help to sort of raise awareness of the exhibition and get people to go along to the gallery. So that's our news. I'm hoping there will be some more news in months to come, and I just really want to thank the three of you for being part of it and for spreading the word, and also encourage listeners that if they are living in a city in the UK and would like to have the exhibition hosted in your city and would like to take part even more so, please do get in touch with the email address info@moretomethanhiv.org.uk, and we have more details on our website, which is www.moretomethanhiv.org.uk.
Brilliant.
Yes.
You're very welcome. Take a breath. You can take a breath.
That's
now.
Dry now. Thank you.
It's like a drink. No, but it's amazing to see it grow, isn't it? Like these projects are like it started off as a project in Brighton, and now it's starting to develop into something different and amazing. Really, well, it was amazing then, but it's just more it's unbelievable.
Yeah, and it's lovely that it's a grassroots organisation. It's people with HIV that set it up. They wanted to be visible living with HIV in order to combat stigma. This wasn't a charity or a government body saying, you know, we think you should do this or we should. This was people like ourselves doing it, and people in London have also taken up the baton and held it in London. And we have a very dedicated team of people in London that are willing to do more and to pass it on to be big advocates for it to go elsewhere.
Yeah. That's amazing to watch that. Yeah, congratulations. Yeah, congratulations for that money you raised as well. So that's really good.
This is the world of Radio Reverb.
So I start with my injectables next week. I have my first injections up my posterior.
How you feeling, Josh?
Well, I'm all right because what you have to do is you have to go on to the new regime tablets for a month just to make sure that you're going to get side effects. And it's really interesting because I feel a lot better.
Really?
Before, I don't know what, I mean, I was on the tablets for quite a while and then I changed about a year ago, but my muscles were terrible. I felt terrible quite a lot. I'm thinking about it, really muscle aches, and I've just got very tired very quickly. And I've been on them 3 weeks now, the new regime, and my energy levels have just come back, and my muscles don't ache. So it just shows you just what you know.
Yeah.
Sometimes you have to look at so many different combinations now that we can not pick and choose, obviously, because it's but if something's wrong, like for me, I wouldn't have even realise, but now going on this new regime, it shows you how much I was not feeling great.
I think it's important for listeners to know, because there is such a wide variety of drugs available, and you know we're so grateful to be on the treatment that keeps us healthy and unable to transmit the virus on to anybody else. But sometimes I think some patients do put up with side effects when they need not necessarily have to. So it's just certainly worth having a chat with your doctors and nurses and your GPs if they're the only prescriber, and just talk about how you're feeling, and there might be a better combination for you. Obviously, the most clinically appropriate choice will be made, but it's every patient's different. So what will work for Josh might be different to how it works for me. Please do chat to your doctors, because living with HIV is a joy now to be able to live a normal life. We shouldn't have to put up with side effects of any kind.
Don't suffer in silence, you know. Have a chat, speak to someone, you know, because possibility there could be another combination,
So next Wednesday, I have my injections, and you have two injections of the two drugs in your buttocks. And then it's going to be weird, because I was thinking about this. It's going to be weird not taking tablets for a month.
Yeah.
Because that's going to be very strange. So I'm going to keep you updated with like a flannel kind of thing. But it's going to be really weird to, because your brain will want to say, oh, I'm not taking my tablets. Oh, does it work? So it's all that going on. So I'll keep you updated, obviously.
Please do.
So we've got some community news. Have you got something, David, from the Lawson?
Yeah, so the Lawson unit has a patients panel, which is the function of it is to gather information and feedback from patients, and also for the clinic itself to test like things like leaflets with patients to make sure the language is correct. So there's a meeting coming up, so you have to be a member of the patients panel to attend, but you're always welcome to give your feedback and ideas, suggestions and complaints to the Lawson unit directly. So please contact them on just do a search for the Lawson unit clinic in Brighton, and you'll find their page online.
Great. Mm-hmm. Also tomorrow, which is Friday, Lunch Positive, which do a lunch every Friday from noon till 3 p.m. And that's at the community room at Dorset Gardens Methodist Church in Brighton. It's a great lunch, actually. You can call them if you want, because they also do other things as well, don't they? They do befriending and volunteering. So if you're interested in doing things, you can always contact them on info@lunchpositive.org.
Josh, sorry, correct me if I'm wrong. They do also food bank services as well, don't they?
Mm. Yes. Yeah? Yeah, they do quite a few things.
So they also deliver meals to people who are unable to go out as well.
Yeah,
right. So it's always a well-balanced, healthy, nutritious meal. Mm-hmm. If you attend the lunch on Fridays, it's a three-course meal quite often for less than the price of a cup of coffee.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, we had Gary on Gary Partridge, the Lunch Positive won the Queen's Award for voluntary service for 2022. So it's an amazing service. And also, mm-hmm. just to mention the Sussex Beacon, if you want to chat to them, you can text them on info@sussexbeacon.org.uk or give them a call on 01273 mm-hmm. 694 222, and they do a lot of things, don't they, David?
Mm-hmm. Yes, they do. In fact, I'd like to announce they're having a new mindfulness course in September. So if you contact the Sussex Beacon and you can self-refer to that. So it's a 6 or 8 week standard mindfulness cognitive behavioural therapy course. One of the benefits of doing it at the Sussex Beacon is that all your fellow people on the course are living with HIV. So that the issue of living with HIV is, the elephant in the room doesn't exist because you're all the same. But also, compared to like courses similar that the NHS does, is that once you've done the course at the Beacon, you're then able to do the follow-up courses once a month. They have an evening class, and once every 2 months, they have a whole day of silent guided meditation. And that helps you continue the practice of mindfulness. And mindfulness, for me, helped me with my depression, anxiety. I was taking drugs and self-medicating. Mm-hmm. And also dealing with chronic pain. So mindfulness has helped me more than medication ever has.
Wow.
So it's a well worthwhile course if you are suffering from any things like addiction, depression, anxiety, chronic pain, and things like that. So it's amazing how powerful the mind can be. And, you have all the tools at your disposal. It's just knowing how to access to relax, breathe, and live in the moment rather than worrying about what happened in the past or worrying about what's going to happen in the future. It really it's transformative. It takes some work and dedication. And that's the benefit of having these continuation courses, which you wouldn't normally get if you just did a standard mindfulness course. So they're starting in September. Please do contact the Sussex Beacon on the numbers that Josh just said beforehand.
I'll say it again, 01273 694 222. So that's it. We've come to the end of another show. Another one.
Oh, sorry.
Bites the dust. This goes very quick. It goes very quick, doesn't it?
Oh, I know.
And there's so much news and so much good news happening that it'd be lovely now that Josh has more time that we can perhaps do a more weekly one.
I mean, that's the goal, isn't it, everyone, to make, to have a weekly show, because, there's so much stuff out there we can do, but it's just getting a chance, to do it with our individual commitments and everything else. So, do it, that is our goal, isn't it, to get out a weekly show, so.
Yeah, and we've got some fantastic listeners across the globe. Mm. Please do get in touch with your feedback, your comments and suggestions, the things that you think we should be covering, especially internationally. We'd love to know what living with HIV is like in your communities.
Your stories are really important, and hearing other people's stories can be so important for somebody. So, we're always really grateful for hearing those stories.
Yeah. Mm. So it's if you want to get in contact, it's hiv@gmail.com, which is our email. Mm-hmm. But you can go on our Twitter, can't you, at hiv_hour. And obviously the podcasts, which just type in HIV Hour in Spotify, iTunes, and give us a listen. There's a lot of older shows there, so with lots of great interviews. Yeah. Fabulous.
Wonderful.
Shall we? We've got a Pride show next week as well. So we're going to do a Pride show next week. So,
Oh, great.
Bye,
cheerio,
everyone.
Gang.
Bye. See you soon. Bye.
Bye.
HIVR is the
the UK's only show for people living with HIV, sharing stories, news and views on living positively with the virus.